Hello and welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. In October, we were very lucky to have our Cardi Party hosted by CoAzit, the not-for-profit organisation for Italians and Australians of Italian descent located in Carlton. Our speaker, Paolo Boracchi, is the coordinator of the Italian Historical Society. After his talk, he kindly gave attendees a tour of the beautiful and interesting Museo Italiano, which we all agreed was worth a visit.
Thank you for organizing this beautiful evening. Welcome, very big welcome to everybody. My name is Paolo Boracchi. I am the coordinator here of the Italian Historical Society and Museo Italiano. And I'll try to give you as clear and incisive an overview as possible in 20 minutes or so. Just to frighten you at the beginning. Now, this is just to give an idea of the various branches of this organization. So we are in the CoAzit building. This is CoAzit, Comitato Assistenza Italiani, Committee for the Assistance of Italians. It has a large welfare branch that I have not articulated because I have not spelt out because it's not relevant, except as a sort of background. What we're looking at today is the Museo Italiano, the Historical Society, so the heritage branch within the cultural sector of CoAzit. So there's a welfare sector, a cultural sector that in turn is subdivided into a heritage branch, which is about Italian-Australian history, Italian-Australian culture, Italian Historical Society, that means Italian-Australian Historical Society. So we're not interested in the Renaissance or ancient Rome, even less. The Museo Italiano is this space, and the space you've walked through to enter this room is the temporary exhibition space. There's also an education branch, which is very important, and chronologically it comes first. It's focused on Italian language, Italian culture, and it's about supporting the teaching of Italian language and culture in Australia. So this is Italian focused, if you like, but there's numerous and increasing overlaps, interactions, and synergies between the two, and I'll speak to you a little bit about them as we go along. So perhaps a quick sketch of the history of this organization will be helpful to give you a feel of the kind of activities that we run and the spirit with which they are run. So CoAzit starts in 1967, so those are towards the end of the 20 years of mass migration from post-war Italy. We're talking of over 250,000 people who made their way from Italy to Australia in the years between 47 and the early 70s, 74. So it's a very large cohort of people arriving, together, of course, with other communities, particularly obvious parallels with the Greek community. The community is largely composed of people with basic education from usually traditional rural backgrounds, small towns, and no proficiency in English, and so on. So this explains the need in 1967 for a welfare organization, which was and is funded by both governments, to interface between the Italian community and the Australian services. From very early on, from the 1970s, CoAzit arms itself with a cultural branch. It is thought that, you know, welfare is a holistic thing. It's not only about material issues, it's also about maintaining language, maintaining culture, maintaining identity. So in the 1970s, the Resource Centre starts with programmes, the aim of which was to maintain the language in the children The children are growing up here, they are being schooled in Australia, and their language, their Italian language skills are not progressing, they're slipping backwards and so on. Soon afterwards, the focus of the Resource Centre moved to encompass, as well as teaching Italian to the sons and daughters of migrants, it moved to encompass also the support and promotion of the teaching of Italian in Victorian schools. These were years in which, especially the 80s, were years in which the Italian government was wealthier or more generous, and substantial funding was made available to organisations such as COASIT to set up the teaching of Italian in Australian schools. Basically, COASIT paid teachers to go around and teach Italian in schools. Principals, of course, liked this idea, and when the funding gradually decreased, the ball was already rolling, and to this day, the teaching of Italian is one of the, I'm not sure if it's the second or the third, or but it's very high up as foreign languages taught in Australia go. Earlier this year, I went with my manager to visit other Italian migration museums and study centres in the United States and in Italy, and we're comparing numbers of students of Italian in Victorian schools. It turns out that there are more students of Italian in Victorian schools than in the whole of the United States. So this is a result that is to a large extent in Victoria due to efforts of this organization. In 1981, the Heritage branch opens with the Italian Historical Society. The instigator was Sir James Gobbo, who at the time he was president here of COASIT, and he got the Historical Society going around an oral history collection campaign. That was the first, the nucleus out of which the Historical Society gradually grew. The Italian Historical Society, as I said before, is about collecting, preserving, and sharing the Italian-Australian history. So Italian-Australian story, so the history of Italian migration to Australia, Italian-Australian communities, Italian-Australian culture, and so on. The Museo Italiano comes along much later, in 2010. I started work here in 2007. And I was part of the working group that set up the museo, so that was a really interesting process. It took about 2 years, although the feeling was that most of the work occurred in the last 2 weeks, but I can assure you that it was 2 years. So the museo, the Historical Society engaged in a lot of collecting, and in exhibitions that were held mainly in the State Library of Victoria, or they were itinerant exhibitions and publications. It didn't have a space of its own to display its collections and to interact in a systematic way with the community. The museo comes along in 2010. It was funded by the Victorian Government Cultural Precincts Enhancement Programme. The Italian precinct, the Greek precinct, the Chinese precinct received substantial funding to develop projects similar to this. The Museo Italiano is made of two main components: the permanent exhibition, which of course attracts visitors, and it has a large sector of captive audience of school students. So every week, several hundred students will come and visit the museum, and in this room they'll do the education programs prepared by my colleagues in the Resource Centre. So this shows you how the Resource Centre and the museo interact. They work together. The Resource Centre, its focus is the teaching of the Italian language. The museo's focus is the history of Italian migration to Australia. According to me, of vital importance. They comprise temporary exhibitions, and events which occur in this room, lectures, presentations, workshops, many, many book launches, because many people in the Italian community, as I imagine in other diasporic communities, are feeling it increasingly important to write down their story to consign for posterity, and very often these books are launched here. Film nights, live music nights. This brings me to the next dot point. The Historical Society and the Museo have liaised with other organisations from day one, but in particular since 2015, there's been an important collaboration, the MMV network, Multicultural Museums of Victoria. So it's the Museo Italiano, the Chinese Museum, the Islamic Museum, the Jewish Museum, the Hellenic Museum, and the Koori Heritage Trust. So it's these six. So we collaborate with them on a regular basis, and not this Sunday, but the Sunday coming, we'll have one of the sort of more entertainment-based events, which is the cooking competition between the museums. This year we are hosting it at the Carlton Italian Festa, so it's a great idea. It's something that I believe in a lot, the Multicultural Museums of Victoria, because it reflects what we are becoming. My wife is Chinese, my children look Asian, but they speak Italian, they have Italian names. So this is where we are headed, and I think this is an excellent reason. The collaboration with the Kathleen Syme Library is also an important element of these of synergies with other organisations. The collaboration is on the theme of family history, Italian-Australian family history. It's an Italian-Australian family history group which has been set up in collaboration between our museo and the Kathleen Syme Library. The seminars are run at the Kathleen Syme Library in the Italian community, largely second, third generation. Maybe when they were growing up, it was not all that cool to be Italian, but now it has become quite acceptable, desirable, and there is this strong drive towards rediscovering our heritage, reconnecting in all sorts of very interesting and creative ways to heritage. It's not simply about unearthing in an archaeological sense. And 2016, this year, yes, this was the travel that I was mentioning before, out of which further liaisons have emerged. Now, the Italian historical, I'll give you just a taste of the basic, the philosophy behind the activity that is done, the spirit in which it's done. So the Italian Historical Society collects, preserves, and shares the history and culture of Italian Australians. That's the sort of punchy statement of what we do. When it was founded, the consideration that Sir James Gobbe always talks about when he recalls instigating the society, the feeling was that the Italian-Australian story was not well known outside of the Italian community. And so the whole point of this exercise is to share the Italian-Australian story and to be able to tell it as an integral part of the Australian story. So share is, I think, the most important of these three verbs, and it builds on the connectivity and the dialogue that are intrinsic to the migrant experience, if you like. We had a book launch last year in which we spoke at length with the author about the migrant living in a third space between the culture of origin and the culture of the destination country. And we were teasing out the idea whether this third space could be a space of reason, a space where someone is displaced from one's comfort zone, both sides, and forced to evaluate, compare, forced. So I think it's reasonably clear. Yeah. My English is a second language. History. So when we say Italian Historical Society, there's of course the historical migration to Australia is logically and the basis, because if it hadn't happened, the community would not be here. And symbolically, it's central in the Italian-Australian culture. But the notion of history that we're looking at is not history as the past. It's not, oh, we're setting up an archive and we file everything away very tidily and keep it for posterity and sort of... it's a different idea. The idea is that history is an ongoing process, and we try to, in this sense, we try to reflect what's going on now in the community. So to include the culture of Italian Australians now, for example, the artistic expressions, and so on. There are some challenges here, so expressed in negative terms, we're striving to be neither inward-looking, so to avoid any sort of ghetto tendency. It's not an organization for Italians. It's not so not inward-looking, and it not be backward-looking. We're not about being focused on the past. The collections of the Italian Historical Society over the years, they are still growing as we speak. There's photographic collections, over 8,000 images. They're available online through Trove, and as well as on the website of the Historical Society. The oral history collection is about 400 recordings, mainly from the 80s and 90s. So lots of them were done with people who arrived here in the early years of the 20th century. So they have an historical interest and an interest for scholars of Italian dialects. Last year we had a linguist who was studying Italian dialects, and in these tapes he found all sorts of things that of interest. We have scholars' archives, archives of historians who have written books on Italian-Australian topics and have left us the archive. The diplomatic archives, which are in microfilm, they are the whole correspondence between the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Italian consulates and in Australia from about 1850 to about 1950. Again, the archives, the collections, we strive to make them as open as possible for scholars and for the community. So yesterday we had Javier Grossuti, who's one of the leading scholars worldwide in Italian migration studies, to migration to the United States, to South America, and to Australia. He's been here for close to a month researching in the archives upstairs, and we are always open to people who come and say, my great-great-grandmother, the family history thing. And we are really equally focused on everybody. This makes us less efficient, of course, but I think it's worthwhile doing. As I was mentioning before, the Italian Historical Society did a series over the years, before the museo came into being, did a series of exhibitions, quite big exhibitions, mainly at the State Library. One that I'd like to mention is Bridging Two Worlds, Jews and Italians in Carlton, because that was back in the early 90s a first instance of collaboration between the two museums. And to this day, we have an ongoing friendship with the Jewish Museum in particular. Publications, the Italian Historical Society Journal has been going since 1989, and if you have a look at in the table of contents of any issue, you'll see a mixture that I'm very proud of, considering, not because it's not nothing to do with me, but we are collectively very proud of, because it has an excellent mixture of community pieces and scholarly pieces, despite the fact that it is not a peer-reviewed, not even a partially peer-reviewed publication. And Per l'Italia, that was a Freudian slip, Per l'Australia, the red book, the large red book that came out in 2006 and was a bit is the major publication. It's very popular, it sells steadily, it's bilingual, richly illustrated with photographs from the local community that were donated by the community. The Museo Italiano, from the beginning when it was coming about, it was felt that it was important that it engaged in a democratic cultural activity. It's not a museum of Renaissance art, or it's a museum of a community. It's the expression of the experience of this community, and so the community is fully empowered to tell its story, both through the permanent exhibition and in particular through the programming. So this is again the model of reason that emerges. We talked before about the model of history. The model of reason is not top down, but it's based on conversation, on dialogue, on back and forth, on opening to interpretation, and increasingly opening to interpretation. The museo, what it does, it nurtures community testimony and cultural expression. Nurtures means that we are extremely encouraging and proactive in inviting people to share their what they have to say, their experience, or their art, or their literature. We really encourage people to do that here. All the activities are free, are open, and. So I talk about community testimony and cultural expression, the cultural turn, because as we move away from the years of migration, of mass migration, it is natural that the focus expands to comprise also the culture of Italian Australians today. You can see the white book, the white book Italian Australian, that was a photographic exhibition that we encouraged and did last year together with the Foundling Archive, and it exactly shows the present of the community and in particular the young generations. So we're nurturing and coordinating community expression, community testimony with specialist research and specialist interpretation. So we have this organic network of relationships with specialists and university departments all over the world, and of course the relevant ones that are interested in Italian-Australian studies, and we try as far as possible to trigger the appropriate synergies. We're close to the end. The philosophy, so it's a person-centered approach. This is just from one of the public programs, jazz accordion music night. So it's good because the accordion is, of course, an instrument of the tradition, of the Italian tradition, and now it is also a vehicle for jazz. So a person-centered approach. So what we collect, what we look at is, we're not a business, we're not a bureaucracy, so we're really focused on the people that come, on the stories that they tell us. We don't collect items, but stories. We accept weird items, sure, originals and copies. For us, we encourage the community to keep the originals because they have an emotional value for them, and for us, the information is all we need. Please touch policy, so everything we have is for people to use, to touch. It's not a sort of museum where you say, don't touch. I'm just thinking of textiles, for example, blankets from the mid-19th century that we have. And those are items that we encourage the students to feel and to hold, with respect, of course. And this is a slide from a collection that we acquired not long ago. It's a collection of hand tinted glass slides, magic lantern slides.
Thank you, Peter. It was very interesting and nice to hear.
Thank you.
From his perspective, this is the first time I've been here, unfortunately. Well, we're coming back. Your kind of approach, particularly to collecting oral histories and the intangible, is really fantastic to see for an organisation that really values stories. Just wondering if you can talk a little bit more about the process that you have around collecting oral histories, and what is an important oral history for you, and what kind of gaps are you looking to fill if you haven't? Sorry, a few questions.
Yeah, no. The bulk of the oral histories that we have, as I was saying, were collected from the early 80s to probably to the mid 80s. We have some from the early 90s. That was because the oral history collection was the first collecting campaign that was done here. Out of the oral history collection came the photographic collection and then all the rest. Currently, we do not have an active oral history collection because lack of resources. It's a pity. We collect photographs, and on a case-to-case basis, we do collect oral histories, but we don't have a focused oral history collecting policy right now. We are looking at, on Monday, I'm happy to announce that we have a new staff member who's starting, and this staff member will be focused on collections, on collecting photographs, oral histories. Basically, we're looking at two areas. So again, for obvious reasons, trying to get the testimonies, the stories of the very elderly, people who can remember the years of the Second World War, people who were interned in during the war, for example. That's a very dwindling cohort, of course. So that's one area. And the other area that we are weak in and we are trying to strengthen is regional and rural Victoria, because of course, being Carlton-based, the vast majority of the stories in the collections are Melbourne stories or even Carlton stories.
Do you, in that capacity, do you, for example, with Bronagilla, do you have a relationship around the Bronagilla stories?
Yeah, we did a temporary exhibition last year on Bronagilla. Bronagilla seen through Italian eyes, and that was a fantastic experience. We had a young intern from Monash University, and her grandfather had been in Bronagilla, and so she took on with great passion the idea of doing the groundwork for the exhibition. So she drove back over there and met the colleagues at the Albury Museum. They sent us some material. We started a conversation. That was another wonderful opportunity, because when we launched the exhibition, we had elderly people speaking about their experience, but not only from the Italian community. So that was really good. And after that, there was one of the a staff member from the Albury Museum who had written a play on her Italian great 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 grandfather that she had never met, and we had the play here. It was lovely.
There was one question here. I think we'll make that the last one. We'll do the tour. There'll be opportunities to talk to Paolo then. And I did promise that we will be done by 7 days. We're pushing it.
Yep. I'll try to be.
Yeah, sure. In the artistic work in the diaspora that tend to have different features, such as celebrating a homeland that no longer exists, or perhaps seeing the new country in fresh eyes. does your collection illuminate that in any way?
The time warp effect, you mean?
Well, the body of work and how it's different by virtue of being created in a new country from the old culture.
Yeah, so the fact that the image of Italy is filtered through memories of an Italy that no longer exists is this. Yes, I think that can be seen in a number of exhibitions that we did. I'm just thinking of the last, well, not this one, the one before, was an exhibition of really fantastic naïf paintings by an 80-year-old woman who recreated in these paintings. She's been back once since she arrived in 1954, and she recreated in these paintings the memories of her youth in Italy, the migration story, taking the ship, coming here, the getting married here, and so on. And there you can, that's just an example, you can see very clearly, and each picture had a story, and there's constant reflections on the present and the past. So there's the picture of the first love and the boyfriend playing a guitar and serenading under the balcony. And then there's the story, and it says, oh, beautiful times, where are romantic men now? They don't exist anymore.
Yeah,
well,
we're all wondering. That's why we're here at the Italian Club.
So I think, for me, as I arrived 20 years ago, so I found it really difficult to get my mind around this. But I'm convinced that elements of Italian traditional culture and pop culture from the period of departure are an integral part of Italian-Australian culture. Last Sunday we had the choir, La Voce della Luna. Their repertoire reflects, it's a choir of 40 women, mainly of Italian background, but not all. And again, their repertoire reflects, to a certain extent, an Italy that doesn't exist anymore. And for an Italian arriving from Italy, it's a somewhat disconcerting experience to have thrown at him or her all these elements of from the past.
That was our October Cardicast, featuring Paolo Baracchi, coordinator of the Italian Historical Society at Coazit. We hope you've enjoyed this live recording and would love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about Cardicast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more Cardicasts, check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events, and remember, folks, JFDI.